Good morning, everyone. How is everyone doing? Awesome. Well, we were having a couple of AV issues, which we have sort of figured out. So you'll see our presentation in this mode, but we'll make it work. So thank you all for joining. My name is Venkat Gattamneni. I am a Director of Product Marketing in Azure. But bulk of the presentation is going to be presented by Michael Washam, who is an Azure MVP and CEO of Opsgility. Michael spends a lot of his time on training enterprise customers on Microsoft Cloud, so Azure, Office 365, and Dynamics. So with that, let me get it over to Michael.
Fantastic. Thank you, everybody. Can everyone hear me in the back? All sounds great? Perfect. Okay, so let's go ahead and just kind of dive right in. But just to make sure everyone's in the same room and knows why they're here, what we're going to be talking about is basically, you know, you want to run SharePoint in Azure. Specifically, we're talking about Azure Infrastructure Service. So it's a 45-minute talk, so we're going to cover a lot of stuff really quick. But definitely feel free to go ahead and raise your hand, ask me a question, as long as it's not too complicated, because we might have to wait until the end if it is, just because we do have a lot of stuff to cover. So let's go ahead and jump in. Very first question I have to ask is, how many of you have never really dug deep, or actually, how many of you have never used Azure Infrastructure as a Service? All right, so we are going to talk about Azure IS 101 real quick, just to make sure everyone's on the same page. And keep in mind, we're going to cover a lot of topics that are very high level, but definitely dig deeper into this, because if one of the key things you're going to learn is that you probably already know SharePoint, and running SharePoint in Azure is not that big of a difference. What's really different is actually understanding the underlying platform itself, understanding storage and compute, things like that, the network. So let's go ahead and jump in. The very first thing I want to talk about is virtual machines. So everyone probably already knows what a virtual machine is. What makes them unique in Azure, though, is that obviously you're not managing the data center they live in, but there's a couple of things that really give you some flexibility and power with virtual machines. The first is you can deploy them on demand. Now, what does that really mean? Yes, I can deploy 10 VMs, I can deploy 1,000 if I want to. There's an unlimited number of compute power under the hood inside of Azure that basically you have access to. And this is not just from a nice user interface, from a portal perspective. You can automate it, you can script it, it's completely programmable. So one thing you'll have to learn whenever you move to the cloud is not embrace your servers. Don't be a server hugger. Don't know them by name. They're just programmable resources. And as long as you can make that transition, it'll help you all tremendously. The other thing that's really unique about Azure Virtual Machines is they're insanely easy to scale up or down. I can start from a little tiny one core with 4 gigs of RAM all the way up to a 32 core with 448 gigs of RAM. It's very flexible in what you can do. And the cool thing is you can change this after you deployed it. So you can literally go resize it, it'll reboot, and now you have a smaller or a larger instance. And this is actually really, really important whenever you're talking about pricing. So cool thing about Azure is you only pay for what you use, which means if I'm using a 32 gig machine with 448 gigs of memory, I'm probably going to pay a lot of money for that. But if I only need it 2 hours a day, I can resize that machine back down to a much smaller instance, and I'm not paying for that giant machine at that time. And again, this is all programmable. You can batch it, you can script it, you can automate it. It's very easy to get that kind of power. And the other thing that Azure gives you is a service level agreement. Azure or Microsoft will guarantee you 99.95% uptime with the service level agreement, which means if they blow that service level agreement, they'll actually pay you back for it. And whenever you're looking at the hundreds of services in Azure, it's if you're brand new to Azure, it's completely understandable to be bewildered where to start. The one thing you should know about virtual machines is if you don't know if it'll run in Azure, like in Azure Web Apps or SQL Database or whatever, it will almost always run in an Azure virtual machine. It's just a virtual machine. It just runs Windows. It runs Linux. It's just like what you use back on-prem. So if you're not sure where to start, start here. It's always going to be a pretty safe option. Now, behind virtual machines, obviously you can have a computer and a nice server all you want, but if you can't connect to it, it's pretty worthless. So behind a virtual machine, you have an Azure virtual network. Every virtual machine provisioned in Azure runs on a virtual network. And all a virtual network is it's a network that you defined, software-defined networking. I'm sure everyone's heard that term. It's literally you go into the portal, you create a new virtual network, you define the address spaces that are in the virtual network, you define subnets, you define network security groups, which are essentially access control lists. You do all the basic things that you would think of if you were defining a network, except instead of managing routers and physical devices yourself, you're doing it all through a web page or a template or PowerShell or whatever you want to do. It's all programmable, just like VMs. Azure Virtual Networks support the ability to bring DNS with you. Now, why is it important? Well, everyone knows that deploy SharePoint today, that SharePoint server has a massive dependency on Active Directory. In order to find Active Directory, you have to specify the DNS server's IP address. This is where this comes in. I have a DNS server deployed, whether it's on-premises or in my virtual network. Whenever my SharePoint VMs boot up, they have to know how to find my Active Directory DC, and it's set through the VNet, not on the virtual machine itself, which is why, again, I tell you, you have to learn the platform because it's different. It's not that different, but it's just enough to make you a little bit confused when you first get started. Virtual networks also are responsible for connectivity between the cloud and your data center. So the assumption here is not everyone is just going to lift and put every workload they can possibly have up in Azure. That'd be fantastic, but it's probably not very likely. What is going to happen is part of your workloads will be on-premises. Like, probably your Active Directory domain controllers will probably live on-premises for the most part, and then you'll add them up to the cloud. Hybrid connectivity is a technology that allows Azure to connect back to your data center via private connection, or I'll explain the differences shortly. It also does really advanced things like supports custom routing, which means you can deploy virtual firewalls up in Azure and get much more enhanced security, or other things like wide area network optimization, things like that. And of course, network isolation. Built-in firewall rules basically make it nice and simple to lower your attack surface. Now, behind a virtual machine, also, you have storage. Again, this is where you're going to get thrown if you've never used a cloud. You're assuming that whenever you get a server that you're using the storage on the blade in the server or in the data center. You can, but the thing you have to understand about it is that storage on the blade may go away instantly. Now, look at me, maybe like I'm crazy, but that's actually a good thing. The reason it is because if that blade dies, if the power goes out on it, the disk goes down, and all your stuff is on that local machine, someone would have to go in there and physically replace it. Well, that's obviously not what you want to do. So how Azure works is gives you the local disk for temporary things, but you have this new service, well, not a new service, but you have this other service called Azure Storage that basically is where all of your storage actually lives. And what that means is if your disks go dead in Azure Storage, you don't even notice it. You might notice a reboot, but beyond that, it automatically happens. Your data is replicated 3 times inside of a storage count. That's the minimum replication you can actually get. You can actually get much more durability, but it's minimally replicated 3 times, and if something fails, you never even see it. It just automatically is picked up from the other disks. And that's kind of the value of not having it on the physical disk, but it's off into a separate service. Now, in Azure Storage, there are 2 tiers. There's standard storage, which is basically equivalent to a regular hard disk, a little bit higher latency because it is a service. Then you have premium storage. And as SharePoint admins or developers, you're always going to want to use premium storage. And you might think I'm trying to sell you something. I'm not. I'm a trainer, not a salesperson. You will appreciate it whenever you boot up virtual machines, and they're much more responsive. They're much faster to work with. So the key thing with premium storage is you can get up to 5,000 IOPS per disk. Supports, actually, that slide is wrong. They just added geo-redundancy. So you can actually have it replicated to a different region automatically for you. And premium storage is for very high-end workloads. Now, you think 5,000 IOPS per disk is pretty high, but the other thing you need to understand is whenever you're using Azure Virtual Machines, you can get multiple IOPS on a single disk by striping them together. So if I wanted a workload that would support 20,000 IOPS, I'd create 4,000 or 5,000 IOPS disks, premium disks, stripe them together. Now I have a big 4 terabyte disk that can support 20,000 IOPS. That's basically how you get really high throughput with premium storage. And you can take this all the way up to 64 disks. Now this is kind of the coolest thing about Azure, in my opinion at least, is where can you actually deploy? And this is important because, you know, if you're a SharePoint admin, you can deploy on your laptop for testing, you can deploy in your data center. You know, if you actually need to deploy anywhere else on the planet, you really can't do that without actually acquiring a data center. Azure, you can deploy 34 regions worldwide, 30 of them are online, more of them are actually coming all the time. Now, what's really neat, this is the second caveat to this, and there's been a lot of talk about this product at Ignite this time around, is you can also deploy on-premises. Now, you're probably questioning my judgment because I'm telling you all about the public cloud, but what's nice about this is Azure Stack, if you haven't heard of it yet, and Azure Stack is basically an on-premises version of Azure, so virtual machines, compute, networking, things like that. What makes it interesting is I can define all this really cool templating stuff, which I'll show you here in just a little while, that I can deploy directly to Azure in a public cloud. I can take that exact same template and deploy it on-premises. So I can test it locally, I can deploy it in the cloud, move them back and forth, doesn't really matter. Now, if you've never used Azure, there's a bunch of things that you'll need to get used to. The Azure Management Portal is where you basically do all your core management tasks. All your automation, you're gonna, even if you're an IT pro and you've never done it, someday you will live a long time and enjoy yourself in Visual Studio or VS Code. You'll probably get pretty used to using PowerShell, so another new skill that you'll pick up shortly. And of course, if you're a developer and you wanna automate Azure, everything is via REST API. You can automate anything that you can do in a portal, you can do from code. So let me show you a real quick demo just to kind of get everyone up to speed on the same thing. Get on the right machine first. So if you've never seen it, this is the Azure Management Portal. And again, there's a lot to look at here, so I'm not gonna spend too much time on it. But essentially, you have all of your different resources. On the left, you can navigate through them down at the bottom here by going to more services. And what I said about Azure being a little bit bewildering is absolutely understandable, because this is the list of available services you can deploy from with Azure. It's a little crazy. So beyond that, what we're gonna do is actually walk through the process of creating a VM. So I'm gonna go into new, and if you look under compute, there's all these featured things that you can do, like Red Hat, Ubuntu, Windows Server, things like that. But this is a SharePoint session, so we're gonna deploy a SharePoint server. And if I type into marketplace, search box, I basically get a list of everything that has SharePoint in it. And this is gonna pull back quite a few things, SharePoint farm templates, SharePoint 2016 trial, a bunch of third-party solutions around SharePoint, and we're gonna go ahead and just pick the individual trial machine. Give it a name. Someday I'll want them to auto-generate a name, but progress is happening still. You give it the local username and password for the machine, and you use it. You put it in a thing called a resource group. And I'll explain a little bit more about resource groups to you later, but trust me, this is something that you definitely want to think about ahead of time. And here's where you can pick one of those 34 locations. So, literally, if you want to deploy in North Europe, you click a drop down box. Since we're not in Europe, we're going to pick East US, a little bit closer to where we are. And all the different instance sizes. There's, you know, anywhere from a really small super inexpensive machine all the way up to the really, really beefy, the G sizes, as they call them, the Godzilla ones, just because they were so big at the time. Now, this is a big question, is whether it's Wi-Fi or is it Azure? Since Venkat's here, I'll blame Wi-Fi. Okay, so right off the bat, you can see that this image is actually bringing up a couple of recommended images. And the reason it's doing that is because, basically, if you're installing SharePoint server on a single VM, you need a lot of memory. You don't have to do this. Of course, you can split it all out, and we'll show how that works too. But this one's gonna be deployed on 4 cores, 28 gigs of memory, up to 12,800 IOPS. Now, a couple other cool things I'll show you is the virtual network. Again, you can spend 3 days just talking about virtual networks, but this is kind of the general idea of what it is. It's essentially a software-defined network. You're defining address space that your IP addresses are gonna be allocated from, and you're gonna run from there. There's all kinds of other things we can talk about here, like extensions, where we can automatically run PowerShell scripts or Chef, Puppet, things like that, but we'll save that for another time. And we'll go ahead and hit okay. And behind the scenes, this is spinning up a quad-core 28 gigs of memory, a virtual machine that we could actually have SharePoint installed on it by default. Now, everyone's probably, if you've installed SharePoint before, by default, this will be at the product configuration wizard, so it's not a farm or anything like that. You still have to go install AD, you still have to install SQL, all that good stuff. But that's kind of the quick crash course on Azure IaaS. I would highly recommend digging a little deeper if this is where you're going. Question? For the Azure what? Good question. So the question was, is there a disparity between the classic portal and the new portal? And for the most part, at least from a SharePoint perspective, there's not. The last remaining big gap was Azure Active Directory, and that's now in preview, thankfully. So that's probably gonna be once it gets out of preview, that'll officially be there, but for all intents and purposes, you can use it now. Excuse me. All right, so let's talk about planning and deploying SharePoint in IaaS. So just so everyone's on the same page, there are three different models that we're talking about when we're talking about SharePoint, at least. Do you have a question? Fantastic question. So the question was about licensing. So if I deploy 10 SharePoint servers and then I need to scale it up to 20, what does the licensing look like? And there are some images in Azure that actually allow you to just buy it on demand. There's actually quite a few of them. SQL Server is a really good example. As you add more SQL servers, you pay more in licensing if you're using that model. And if you scale it back, you're paying less in licensing. SharePoint doesn't do that, though. SharePoint only has a bring your own license model right now. So basically, whenever the SharePoint servers that we're spinning up, these are basically trial images. If you actually want to deploy something productive, you would need to have the licenses for that. So if you need to go from 10 to 20, you'll need 20 licenses for it. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about planning for deployment. If you're moving into or if you're going to plan on moving SharePoint into Azure, there's, you know, you're basically looking at, hey, I'm going to go deploy in a brand new data center. So you kind of have to start at the foundational level. And this is really things like connectivity, identity, things like that that you would have to do if you were just starting from scratch. Now, in the Azure world, connectivity, like we said, is a little different. If you're planning to connect your data center to Azure in a public cloud, there's a couple of options that you have for SharePoint. The first is ExpressRoute. ExpressRoute is the one that you will use if you have a pretty significant farm and it's deployed up in the cloud. You're probably going to lean towards ExpressRoute by default, just because it has a bandwidth that goes all the way up to 10 gigabit per second on each per circuit. And yes, you can have multiple circuits. If you're just getting started, you're doing like a really small farm, just a real small intranet, you just want to try it out, see how it works, you probably don't want to try it out with ExpressRoute. You probably want to try it out with a site-to-site VPN. And this is basically, we're going to use your existing internet connection. So whatever your connection between your data center and Azure is today, that's what the site-to-site VPN is going to use. The bandwidth is up to 200 megabits per second on the gateway itself. So this is basically the very first choice that you have to make if you're deploying a production workload of SharePoint server in Azure is, you know, how am I going to get my connection and what is that going to look like? The second thing you're going to have to plan for is identity. So on-prem today, if you're using SharePoint server, you're using Active Directory. All your service accounts are all Active Directory. Everything is Kerberos. All has to kind of work that way. And it's not a whole lot different once you move to Azure. Whenever you go to Azure, there is this thing called Azure AD, and it is a PaaS service, and it's very wonderful, but it does not authenticate Kerberos accounts. So you'll still need Active Directory. There is another service coming along very shortly. It's actually out there in preview. You can try it out now, called Azure AD Domain Services. And this is essentially domain controllers as a service. So if you don't like managing AD, take a look at this. Just remember it is in preview today, so don't roll out anything production. But it's definitely something that will make your life a little bit easier whenever you're managing identity up in the cloud. That being said, without Azure AD or without Active Directory domain services, you do need to provision domain controllers up in Azure. And you'll do that just like any other virtual machine. You'll establish connectivity between your on-prem AD, because if you want to use the same domain controller, that is, you can. There are total models where you don't have to have that connection. You deploy a brand new domain up in the cloud, maybe you establish some kind of trust with your on-prem. Either way works, but that being said, you definitely will have AD up in Azure. Now, the second piece is you can still use Azure AD with SharePoint, and that's as authentication for users over the internet. Question? SQL Server? So the question was, can you use Azure SQL Database with SharePoint? And that is still not supported. So you still have to deploy SQL Server as part of your deployment. So SQL Server will still be your friend for quite a ways. SQL always on, especially. All right, so now the bigger question. I did my planning, I did my homework, I want to move everything to the cloud. What does that really look like? What does a practical migration look like? And to be honest, there's probably no such thing as a practical migration. Everyone will have different use cases, different problems that they're going to run into, compliance issues, bandwidth constraints, you name it. It'll pop up. But there are some general things that you're going to be doing. And, you know, obviously, if you're looking at any kind of SharePoint migration to, whether it's to a different data center or just, you know, to make a copy of it for dev test, there's a couple of things you have to do. You have to make sure that you get the data over your content databases. All that stuff has to be in the new data center. You have to recreate the farm. SharePoint's not real happy about copying and pasting itself. So there's some basic things that you have to do. And in Azure, the very first thing is you'll establish that foundation, choose your connectivity, choose your identity. If you don't do that first, you'll probably regret it later. So make sure you start there, unless you're just testing. If you're just testing, and I'll show you how to try this out really quick without having to learn ExpressRoute. But if you're doing this in production, you do need to get that foundation. But the manual approach is, one of the easiest things you could do is literally deploy, if you have SQL Always on-prem, deploy another SQL Always On replica in Azure, have that content replicated to the cloud. Once it's replicated, install SharePoint on all the VMs you need in your farm in the cloud, and essentially failover. Now you do that failover, all your data's on the new replica up in the cloud, it's all mostly up to date, and then you basically rebuild the farm and put it all back together again. That's one method. Another method is to use Azure Site Recovery. How many of you have heard of Azure Site Recovery? Oh, awesome. Okay, so Azure Site Recovery is a really, really, really interesting service, not just for migration, but for, as the name kind of implies, disaster recovery. What Site Recovery does is it will put an agent on your machines on premises, or even in AWS for that matter, and it will replicate that data of the virtual machine itself, not your databases or files, but every IO to all the disks on that machine. It can be a physical machine, it can be virtual machines, it can be Hyper-V, VMware, it doesn't matter. And it replicates those up to Azure, and it can be created as a virtual machine. So how migration works with Azure Site Recovery is you replicate all of your SharePoint servers, your SharePoint, your SQL servers, Active Directory if you want, and you basically replicate it all up to Azure, and you fail over. Because basically the data's there, you fail over, it boots up virtual machines in Azure, with all the exact data that you just replicated, and it replicates on a 30-second basis, so it's not like there's a big lag of time. And once you fell over, essentially, you've been migrated. You're in Azure. The thing is, just don't fail back. And if you fell back, it's fell over. If you leave it there, it's migration. That's really the big difference. The thing you have to understand about ASR, though, is it does have a 1 terabyte disk size limitation because Azure disks have a 1 terabyte disk size limitation. And this is sometimes kind of a blocker for existing workloads. If you have your SQL Server on a 10 terabyte share, it's not going to work by default. You'll have to do something differently to make that happen. So that's kind of the caveat with ASR, which is why you may fall back to the manual approach of just uploading a backup of your database and reconfiguring SharePoint. Now, one other thing to think about is there are a lot of really, really big SharePoint farms that have terabytes and terabytes of data. Just replicating that over your internet connection, sometimes not the best idea. It might take longer to replicate than it would be to literally put it in a truck and drive it to the data center. So in that case, there is an option where you can literally put it on a disk, put it in a truck, and ship it to the data center. And that's called the Azure Storage Import-Export Service. And basically what it says, exactly what I said, is you get a series of physical disks, you export your encrypted data, and it will absolutely encrypt it. There's a tool you'll get that'll actually encrypt this data with your key. You encrypt the data, put it on the disks, ship it to Azure. The Azure team will then, in the data center, actually put this on a storage account and export it using your key for you. Well, you actually will export it using your key. So that's how you get big, massive amounts of data into the cloud itself. So now let's talk about how do we actually get started. And again, this is before, so you don't have to jump in and actually set up site-to-site VPN, ExpressRoute, and all that good stuff. If you just want to learn Azure and try to use SharePoint as your learning tool, that's the easiest way to jump in. And you need no other requirements other than an Azure subscription to do that. So getting started is literally just creating virtual machines, configuring them. Or you have a couple other options, which are deploying with Resource Manager templates. Anyone know what a Resource Manager template is? A few? Okay. So I'll explain what a Resource Manager template is. And of course, customizing and building your own, which is really where you get the big value add of automation in the cloud. So before we jump into that, just kind of want to give you a tour of what is actually in the marketplace. This is what we're going to show in some cool demos here. Very first thing is, you already saw this one, the SharePoint Server 2016 trial. This is literally just a virtual machine image that has SP 2016 installed all the way up to the point of the product config wizard. There's a 2013 image there as well. And this is used in templates, for one thing, so they can provision whole farms. You can basically use it to build your own SharePoint forms too manually, doing everything you would normally do. It's just a really good starting point. But then there's also these two other options, SharePoint 2013 non-HA form and then HA form. And those basically will actually completely provision a working SharePoint form, complete with SQL, complete with AD, and SharePoint itself. So it's an awesome starting point for just jumping in and trying to figure out how this stuff works. Probably not designed for production because it does deploy its own AD, unless you want your own AD for it. And then it's a huge jump starting point. So what the template will deploy is essentially a bunch of virtual machines. And so if you deploy the HA one, so be warned here, because this will rack up your Azure bill pretty quick. So spin it up, take a look, shut the VMs off when you're not using them, and you won't have any problem. But it'll essentially deploy some front-end web servers. It deploys some SharePoint servers that have the other roles, and we know there's different, 20 different variations of role deployments on VMs you can do, but this is basically everything except the front-end web role deployed onto these servers. Then you have SQL Server always-on availability groups deployed, and you have two Active Directory domain controllers. Now, the thing that's interesting about this diagram is a feature that we really haven't talked about, and that's called an availability set. So this is another one of those Azure IaaS things. Basically, whenever you deploy virtual machines into an availability set, what happens is the virtual machines, they all need to be basically the same type of thing. So you don't want to mix a web server and a SQL server in the same availability set. That's not the intended goal. But what happens if you deploy like three web servers or three SQL servers or whatever into an availability set is Azure will physically separate them across different racks in the data center, up to three different racks. And basically what that means is you don't have a single point of failure anymore. If they're all deployed on the same rack, they could be in different blades all you want, but if the rack itself goes out, you lost your whole farm. So what SharePoint's or Azure's doing for you is basically automatically distributing your machines across different physical racks in the data center to give you much better chance of having good availability. Okay, the other template that gets deployed is probably the one that you'll use for the real to try out, and this is the non-HA template. This is literally same tiers, but a single instance each. No SLA in this one, but again, it's just for trying things out. It's for dev test, trying things out, experimentation, things like that. Basically, you get the same kind of deployment, except just instead of having that separate app tier, they're all on the same virtual machine size, or the same front-end virtual machine, then you'll have the SQL and AD. Now, in real world, what you would do is whatever you need to do for your farm configuration, you would go back and add servers, add SharePoint servers, and then you'd reconfigure the roles on them. And this could, this is an example of what that may look like, but your mileage may vary depending on what you need, which services you're trying to optimize in your specific farm configuration. All right, so a lot of talking. Let's go show a little bit more of the portal itself, or Azure. Sure thing. Mm-hmm. It will be coming for 2016. I don't know when, but it's in the works, absolutely. I think there's probably a reasonable chance that you could actually go and swap the images names out of the templates and it would probably still work. But I haven't tried it yet, so don't quote me on that. Sure thing. So the question is, can I do a geo-distributed deployment of a SharePoint farm? And the answer is surprisingly yes. It's not easy, but there are services that make this easy. For the front-end piece of it, if I deploy front-end web servers in North Europe and one in East Asia or wherever the other region may be, what I can do to distribute traffic between those two is using a service called Traffic Manager. And keep in mind, when I'm talking about doing this, this is only for internet-facing SharePoint sites. If it's internal, it'd be a different story because Traffic Manager only distributes traffic between two endpoints on publicly addressable IPs. So as long as you're using Traffic Manager, then you can definitely load balance between two farm deployments. Now the trickier part is how do you replicate the data between the two? So if someone uploads a file in West US and someone uploads a file in Europe, how does that synchronization happen? SQL Server does not support multi-master replication. So that's really the hard part that you're going to run into. What you can do is you could have a database split into a different region, and with always on, you can make that readable, but you can't make it writable. So what you'd end up having to do is create two separate farms and basically build some kind of synchronization strategy. And I wouldn't swear to it, but I think there's actually third-party software out there that'll keep two farms in sync. So if you did something like that, then you would absolutely be able to accomplish it. But the front end is easy, the back end is hard. So as long as you can figure out the back end part, then you're in great shape. So let's go ahead and walk through what a SharePoint farm, you know, the templates look like, just so everyone knows how to kind of get started pretty easily. So essentially, I'm going to go back to the new, go into SharePoint, and here's those two different templates. I'll go ahead and show you the SharePoint HA farm template. This is the big one. I think, last time I looked, I think it's around 25, 30 cores, something like that. So by default, if you have a trial subscription in Azure, it won't work. You have to up your core limit to make sure you can deploy this, just because a SharePoint farm is a pretty big resource to deploy. So basically what you're seeing here is the deployment of a template. And what a template is in Azure is basically underneath the covers, it's a block of JSON code. And the JSON code describes the resources in Azure that you're going to create. So virtual machines, storage accounts, network interfaces, virtual networks, everything that you can create in a portal, you can model this in a template. And it's really powerful too because you can orchestrate it. And SharePoint was actually the product that was used to validate orchestration because it's so complicated to deploy. And the goal was if you can deploy SharePoint with a template, then you can probably deploy anything else because couldn't be harder than SharePoint. So what we're looking at here is basically the parameters to this template. The template for SharePoint farm requires the name of the farm itself, the subscription I'm deploying to, a resource group, and I'll just give it a name here. The location, so the region I want to deploy this farm to. And then we go into this block infrastructure settings. And this is, you know, basically the farm account, the username and password that you're going to use to create this farm. And one thing you'll notice when you go back and create this yourself is you'll type in this password a whole lot. Slowly. All right, so it has to be the first one wrong. There we go, okay. Now, storage count name prefix. As I mentioned, virtual machines store their disks not on the local disk, but in the storage, Azure storage. And every storage instance has a name. It's an actual entity that you can manage independently. And what this is gonna do, it wants a prefix, because the template's basically gonna randomly generate a name for you, so you don't have to find a unique one yourself. Pick something dangerous like Ignite Storage and see if I blow up any other demo people out there. Okay, and then the name of the virtual network. And now we're in Active Directory. So as you can see, we're literally defining parameters for every tier of our SharePoint farm. So once we go into the Active Directory, once this loads up, it's going to want to know the instance size, the name of our Active Directory domain to provision, you name it, everything you kind of need to know to provision AD. It's definitely thinking about it. Let's try it one more time. There we go. And by default, it's going to pick contoso.com. Feel free to, you know, whenever you're deploying this, you can pick whatever you want. And it's the instance size. And it's going to go through all this stuff for SQL and SharePoint, et cetera, et cetera. Now, what's cool about this, let me show you a real quick trick. If you go to github.com/Azure and you type in Quick Start Templates, Azure Quick Start Templates, the template that I used in the portal is actually defined in here in GitHub. So I can go in here and I can look at the source code for this to figure out what it is, and I can use it to start my own template. So if I wanted to create a HA server farm, and again, if you haven't ever used ARM templates, this will look like gibberish. It's not as hard as it looks, but it's basically just a big block of JSON code. And I mean a big block of JSON code. But again, this is defining a workload that, you know, 30 cores, has SQL, SharePoint, AD, lots of orchestration, lots of waiting on things provision, you know, because you can't start up your SharePoint VMs until AD is provisioned because they wouldn't be able to join the domain, things like that. Very powerful workflow, but definitely something that takes a little bit of time getting used to. All right, so if I had to finish that, it would basically go off and provision things. Question? That's it. There's in a template, you can actually reference an existing resource. Or in your case, you'd basically not want to create the ADVMs at all, and you'd just basically want to point it to your existing DC server, DC, change the IP. So yeah, that would absolutely be the way to do it. Sure. The templates absolutely could. They would need to be customized. Well, they don't necessarily have to be. The trick is, if you already have an existing AD environment, and you want to join to that domain specifically, you're going to need to modify the template to point to not create the two new domain controllers, but instead to point to your existing AD. If you just want to deploy a new SharePoint farm and have a brand new Active Directory domain, absolutely, that will do it right off the bat. It's configured with general best practices, highly available, and it's ready to roll. It's really just that one adjustment that you'd have to make. Well, it's because the AD. The assumption is if you're deploying a new SharePoint farm, you're probably deploying to an existing Active Directory environment. And this one's going to spin up a brand new one, so it wouldn't join as part of your existing environment. But you can absolutely make it. It's basically, templates are designed to give you a starting point. All the quick start templates are, I need to do something really interesting or really powerful. There's probably not a template that does exactly what I want ever. I've never had one that does exactly what I want, but it will get you 80 to 90% of the way there. All right, so kind of moving on. Now let's talk a little bit about operations. Do you have a question? So the question is, how do you actually manage the lifecycle of your templates? And that's actually a very complicated answer or question. But in a simple way, so you know how a template works, is by default, if I take a template, and this is why resource groups are important, if I deploy it to a specific resource group, and there's nothing in that resource group, it will deploy everything in that resource group. If there is stuff in that resource group, what it will do is it'll try to match the existing resource with what's in the template, and if possible, it'll actually try to do an update. So for instance, if I had a virtual machine deployed in Azure and it had one network interface, or let's use a virtual network as a better example, I have a virtual network that's deployed in Azure, I deployed it via template, and then later I need to add another subnet to it. I don't have to go into the portal and add a subnet. I can literally go modify the template that I used to originally deploy it with, run that again, and everything that template, it'll basically look at and say, yep, that's there, it's good, and it'll ignore it. And then it'll add the subnet to your virtual network. So it's basically, you know, kind of doing a difference and just making modifications of what you added to the template. That's really, really the power of it. Now, the opposite way, if I delete something in a portal and I rerun the template, it'll actually go put it back. Now, the tricky part is if I remove something from the template and deploy it, would you expect it to remove it from Azure, or would you expect it to ignore it? Ignore it? that's the tough part. By default, it will ignore it. So if you remove something from the template and it already has been deployed, nothing will happen. But there is a mode, whenever you deploy templates, that will actually remove it from Azure too. It's not by default because people don't want to accidentally get deleted stuff. You have to intentionally do that. So let's talk a little bit about some of the things you can do in Azure to operationalize your SharePoint farm. And when we're talking about operationalizing SharePoint in Azure, I'm not talking about governance in SharePoint itself. There's already tools and guidelines. Everyone already knows how to do that. What's different is Azure itself. How do you do governance in Azure? And trust me, I'm not going to teach you everything in governance in 6 minutes, but I'll give you an idea where to start. So basically, whenever you're talking about governance in Azure, you're really talking about controlling who has access to resources. You know, should everyone be an admin? In the old version of Azure, that was absolutely the case. If you had access to anything in Azure, you had access to everything in Azure. In the new resource manager model, you don't have to give access to anything unless you explicitly want it to. We can go very detailed, and I'll show you a real quick demo of that here in a few minutes. So resource groups, as you can imagine, we've been talking about them for a lot, are very important for two real key reasons. The first one is it's a security boundary. So if I deploy everything in a SharePoint farm, I can give a user access or a group access to that resource group, and they have access to whatever permissions I gave them to all the resources in that resource group. Makes it very easy to segment out who can do what. It's like, okay, this resource group is for HR, great. So all the HR stuff goes in here. But that's not exactly what you're supposed to use them for, so don't quote me on that. But it's a technique. Resource groups also are a unit of billing. So if I want to know how much my SharePoint form costs, if it's all in the same resource group, I can go look at my bill and say, oh, it costs, you know, $2,000 a month to run because it's all part of that resource group. If I split all my servers up and put them in different resource groups and I don't track it, you're going to be looking at your Azure bill trying to, you know, do Excel magic to figure out how much you're actually spending on your SharePoint farm. Now, another feature is resource manager policies. I think this is one of the most important features that's been added to Azure. And I did a user group talk the other day, and I'll repeat it here. Just really interesting piece is, you know, great, you're an EA, enterprise agreement, you create a subscription, you give it to IT. The IT person gets in Azure and is trying to figure out how it works. So they go to new networking, express route, they create an express route circuit with 15 gigabit connectivity, and they're like, oh, that's cool, that's how it works. And they forget about it, they go home, they take a week off, and then 3 months later, they look at their Azure bill and say, what the heck is this? Anyone have any idea how much that would cost? Any ballpark? No ideas? That would be about $45,000. So the moral to the story is be very careful what you create in Azure, especially if you have an EA with a big bucket, because your boss, if he sees you accidentally do that, is going to get mad at you. So what resource manager policies allow you to do as an admin is restrict what services can be created. If you know that team doesn't need to use ExpressRoute because it's already set up somewhere else, block it. They don't need it. They don't need to make that mistake and cost the company a lot of money. Policies can do all kinds of other things, but that's a general idea what they're for. Then you also have resource locks, which are basically a little flag that makes it really hard to accidentally delete something. Because as you can see in Azure, there's lots of things. You certainly don't want someone to get fat finger and delete it. Then you have services, and the services are really, really cool. A security center. Has anyone seen a demo on security center? There's some stuff in the keynote. Security center is really, really fantastic because it'll keep track whether your SharePoint servers are patched, whether malware detection, whether someone's trying to attack them. It actually has machine learning analytics that can detect that stuff and alert you for it. Really, really interesting service. And OMS is I really wish I had more time to talk about OMS, but OMS is an amazing product for SharePoint because it does a couple of things. It gives you really advanced log analytics, so you can go dig through your event logs, you can look at web logs, you can do all the data sources, and it's basically a search engine that you can go query stuff for. But it also does things like automation. So if I want to shut my whole SharePoint farm down every night at 9 o'clock and start it back up at 6 because my whole company went home for the night, I can do that. I can write a simple script, Azure Automation will execute it, shut down your whole farm every night, turn it back on in the morning when everyone comes back in. That's really, really interesting little way of saving thousands and thousands of dollars a month. And a couple other things it does, I'll show you this one, Azure Backup. So Azure Backup comes in a couple of different formats. You can back up individual virtual machines in Azure, a little way by clicking it, telling backup, and it'll back it up. The whole VM, not the files, not the folders, nothing like that. And then you also have a second service called Azure Backup Server. How many of you ever used DPM or Data Protection Manager? Few. So what SharePoint Azure Backup Server is kind of a trimmed down version of DPM. It will allow you to back up things like Hyper-V host, VMware host, SharePoint, Exchange, Bare Metal, and it's basically a service that you download, and you don't have to buy a license for it. You pay for the storage of the backup itself, and there is a additional pricing on the backup service itself, but it's basically backup as a service. You don't have to do tapes, you don't have to do offsite backup, because it's in the cloud. It's already offsite backed up. One more I'll show. This is part of the OMS suite, is Azure Site Recovery. We kind of already talked about it from the migration perspective, but from a disaster recovery perspective, it's really, really amazing because if you have a SharePoint farm that's running in your on-premise data center and your data center goes down and your whole company depends on this, or half your company or a quarter of your company, you have had a major outage and there's nothing you can do until the whole data center comes back online. What Azure Site Recovery does is allows me to replicate my entire farm, everything that I need, whether it's hosted on physical bare metal machines, VMware, Hyper-V, it doesn't really matter. It replicates all that up to Azure. In the event there's a failure, you click failover, and it fails over your entire farm, boots it all up in the cloud, and it works. It's a little scripting involved there. It's not magic, but it does solve most of your problems with disaster recovery. And that service that we asked a little bit about earlier, Traffic Manager, if you have a publicly facing farm, the DNS records will automatically be up to date because Traffic Manager can detect one failure and start resolving for the second endpoint. So I had a really cool demo at the end, but I talk too much. So let's use the last 30 seconds. Anyone have any questions? I know all this makes sense. Question? I can't hear you. Can you grab the microphone?
Hi. Before you mentioned about turn off the whole farm at the night and turn it back on in the morning, how's about all the time of job of the farm, like running, and what's going to happen to those?
Good question. So any obviously, if the farm's off and any jobs that we're supposed to run at night wouldn't work. So, the other alternative, if you do have tasks that need to run during the night, backups that need to be made, things like that, you can minimize your farm. So maybe instead of shutting down all 9 of your servers or all 15 of your servers, maybe you shut down one of each role. And you still are minimizing your cost because no one's using it. Or the other alternative, you could actually lower the size. You could go from a DS14 to a DS1 just because, you know, no one's doing anything with it. And then next night, in the morning, you could scale it back up when everyone tries to log in and takes your server. So there's always ways you can adjust this to optimize. So I'll be around after if you do have any other questions. A couple more things. If you do want to learn more about Azure IS, and if you're in this class, I would definitely recommend doing that. There's quite a few sessions that have already happened that have been recorded, but especially on the networking side, there's a ton of them coming up on Friday. So make sure you grab those. And also, if you get a chance, I'd love to have some feedback on the session, so definitely make sure you give us an eval. But other than that, thank you all very much.